This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined tonight by the man working the sound effects. That would be at Agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Oh, I expect a loud gong.
You want the gong?
Yeah, I want the gong. That's what I should get.
Make sure to check out his website. His website is popculturenetwork.com. Trying to do a couple things out here at the same time. Trying to get this YouTube URL copied. There we go.
And tweeted.
Yes. But as I was going to say mistakenly, make sure to go to theclicknation.com, which is the website where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Make sure to follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Circle us on Google Plus. Search for The Click Nation and join the community. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Make sure to give us some 5-star reviews and thumbs up.
That's right.
Not down, but up.
Ooh, yay.
Subscribe up to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. We're live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And make sure to use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media websites. So before we get into news, let's try to backtrack a couple months where we had this nice idea for our first annual Comic Book Chronicles fantasy draft I think we did this around the same time as the NBA or NFL draft.
Right.
Probably NFL since it was around May.
I think so.
So the premise is that we each picked books. First round was Marvel. Second round was DC. Everyone had to pick a Marvel book, then a DC, Image, Dark Horse, et cetera, et cetera. And basically whoever does the best job of picking the books that have the biggest sales each month will be the winner. So I finally decided to go through and pull May's numbers. Let me pull that up now.
How many months ago was May?
Three.
A couple?
It's like the solicits. Solicits are 3 months ahead. I'm 3 months behind.
Oh, mm-hmm.
It's symmetry. So, I still have the ranking from, you know, the draft order. So I can just go through the draft order and list the books picked and the rankings. Let's see. So, Agent 70's first pick was Amazing Spider-Man. And issue 2 came out that month and ranked number 2.
Yay!
All New X-Men number 27 was my pick, and it came at ranked number 16.
Ooh.
Roddy Cat, who is not here with us but hopes to be here next week, he had Ms. Marvel as his third pick of the first round, and it ranked number 59.
Oh!
And to round out the first round, Dirt had Original Sin, which had its first issue, and of course ranked number 1.
Oh! Good job!
I picked last in that round. Please remember, I picked last.
Hush. And it was snake fashion, so you followed up with Batman Eternal, which came in ranked number 10 for issue 5. Of course, there was 2 issues out that month, but issue 5 was the highest. Mm-hmm. And it was ranked number 10. Roddy Cat came back with Saga. Is that Saga? Okay, I thought the second round was DC. How did he?
No, wasn't second round DC Image?
Oh, okay. So Roddy Cat had Saga, which ranked number 21 for issue 19.
Oh now, no, wait! I think it is straight DC, right?
No, it was DC.
It was DC
Image, and then it was
Dark Horse Dynamite.
There you go.
And then Boom, IDW, and then Wildcard.
There you go.
I've still got it all here.
Yeah.
Okay. So Roddy Cat had Saga. I had Batman, which ranked number 4 for issue 31. Age of 70 had Walking Dead for issue 127. Ranked was number 8.
Yeah!
And then Snake Fashion again. You came back with Star Wars, which ranked number 79 for issue 17.
Aww. Oops.
You picked Star Wars, right? The ongoing Brian Wood. Yeah, okay. I picked Hellboy in Hell, which ranked number 131 for issue 6.
Ooh.
Roddy Cat had Mind Management, which ranked number 315 for issue 22.
Wow!
It's tough pickings when you...
Yeah, once you get down a couple levels, it's hard to get in top 100.
Wow!
Dirt had Dr. Specter for the 12th pick, which was ranked number 142 for issue 1.
That's not terrible.
Yeah, that's better than I thought, actually, yeah.
That's pretty good. Like I said, Snake Fashion again. Another good pick by Dirt was My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. Ranked number 104. For issue 19.
That's
pretty good. It's kind of good to get I could have given the sales numbers, I guess, with these, but oh well. Roddy Cat came back with Adventure Time, was ranked 158 for issue 28.
That's pretty good.
So this is a problem for me because next up I had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which didn't even have an issue in May.
Oh, no. Was that a skip month?
Yeah. So.
So I think you have to take like 500 points or something?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Whatever puts you outside of the rankings, right?
Yeah, like do you have the top 400 in sales or the top 500 in sales that you're going through for those rankings?
I pulled from the ICV2, May 2014. So you pull that page up.
Because if you don't have a book, then you have to take whatever
the lowest number is.
Yeah.
Well, highest number, right.
Right.
I see.
What do you mean, the number of the very last book in the rankings?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if it's out of 500, then you have a 500.
Okay.
Well, it's just top 400, comics actual.
Oh, 400, okay.
Is that what you're looking at?
I looked at the ICV2.com website.
Right. Yeah. For May 2014, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 400 then.
Yep, 400 it is.
Is someone adding these up?
No.
I was going to do that after the show.
We'll probably do that at some point.
Yeah. I just wanted to at least get the ball rolling. Almost done. So, yeah, my skip month for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Dirt, you should actually get 401, not 400, because 400 is Batman 31 combo pack.
Page of 70 had X-Files Season 10, which ranked 167.
Hey!
Then you came back with Uncanny X-Men, which ranked 23 for issue 21.
Oof. That's low.
I came back with Justice League, which ranked number 7 for issue 30.
Good pick, good pick.
Roddy Cat had Sex Criminals, which skipped May.
Oh, no. He gets a 401.
And Dirt finished the draft with Avengers, which ranked number 18 for issue 29.
Good pick, good pick.
Yeah, so I'll try to get those. So are we, you said like each, how are we totaling this up again? We said one, going from one through, like one through, for each round, is it one through four? Or is it just like, I forget exactly how we said we were going to do this.
We talked about it so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's just easiest to just wherever you rank, take that number, right?
Oh, take the number of the ranking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. That's easy. All right. I can do that. And just add them all together.
Is that better, or is it better to take?
I mean, that would be easiest, I guess. Just take the rank number, all the rank numbers, and add them together, right?
So it's, if you have number, book number 1 and book number 43, then your rank is 44.
Yeah.
And if someone else has 117 and 12, then they've got 129, and yeah.
And lower total, the better.
Lower the better, right. Yeah, like golf.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I can have that done tonight, or this weekend, because I'll probably go to sleep right after the show.
Yeah, I got to get up early tomorrow, so I got to. Yeah. At least I don't have to stay up and watch Impact, because it was on last night.
Yeah, they snuck that on me.
They announced it like during the last like 20 seconds last week. And they're like, hey, remember, next week we're moving to Wednesdays. And then they were off the air, and it was like, what? Okay.
They did know like how WCW used to end Nitro's. We're going off the air.
Main event next week, Lex Luger meets Hulk Hogan for the world title. Bye.
What title? Bye.
Yeah, no, TNA actually, they signed some sort of deal with Spike where they get to stay on TV for like the rest of the year. Like through December or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So even though their contract expires in like 2 weeks, they're still going to be on for the next like 4 months. So they're still, they're not dead yet. Pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Not dead yet.
So.
All right.
What about comic?
So comic book news. There's a couple of things to get through this week. So DC announced that Peter Tomasi will be the new ongoing writer for Superman Wonder Woman, replacing Charles Soule. And I forget who the artist is.
Mankey?
Yes, Doug Mankey. So another Superman book I don't need to read anymore.
I don't know, maybe.
Even though I'm enjoying Tomasi on The Robin Rises, so...
Yeah. Like, I really like what Charles Soule has done with the way he characterizes Superman Wonder Woman. So you bring in a new writer, I'm always a little apprehensive about the changes.
Plus, with how long this whole Superman Doom story has dragged out, like, before Doomed, I was reading Action Comics, I was reading Superman Wonder Woman, I was kind of reading Batman Superman, but I have pretty much fallen off of that too, but since Doom has come on, I've read like the first couple of chapters, and I'm just like, nah.
Same.
Yeah, I've got them piled up that I figure I'll get to them eventually, but I just, you know, just one of those things. Just can't find the time right now.
Yeah.
But Superman itself is good with John Romita Jr., Jeff Johns.
I'm enjoying that so far. We'll see how long I can. If I had my, I think what it basically come down to, I'm gonna choose to keep reading Action Comics, Superman, and that's probably gonna be it. Just because you know some stuff can't read everything.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's gonna go on with Action after Doomed. Like I don't even know who's writing and what the storyline's going to be or anything.
Off topic, but kind of still on topic, are you going to continue reading Supergirl with the new creative team?
I'm going to at least give it a shot. I mean, I like the character, so I'm at least going to see where it goes.
Okay. The art should be okay. It's Emmanuel Lupacino doing it.
I don't know who that is.
She's very hot.
She's done the
okay, well,
is she?
There you go. I mean, that just proves, so.
Nice. She's done cool stuff for DC.
Mm-hmm. Has she's done some stuff for Marvel, too, like here and there. Okay. But she's definitely done some Supergirl stuff recently. She did X-Factor a while back.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
And next bit of news. What is next bit of news? Captain America 3 writers talk Falcon, MODOK, and tone of Winter Soldier follow-up. It's kind of self-explanatory.
Anything good?
I don't remember if I edit this article or not. Let's see. Let's click on it and see.
Yes, now is the time to read it.
Yes. I mean, I'm assuming I read it at some point this week. It was probably like Monday or Tuesday when I added this to our handy-dandy spreadsheet as I waste time while the page loads. So they want to do MODOK in future films.
So they want to have a giant floating head with tiny little arms and legs.
And you could have said the same thing about a big walking tree. You know? Not that they hadn't done that already in Lord of the Rings, but...
So they say, while Sam Wilson / Falcon has taken on the guise of Cap in the comics, the film would not match that continuity. On the tone of the third film, Marcus said it would be an amalgam of the first
two. Didn't we overuse amalgam like last show or the show before?
Yeah, amalgam and Chuck Austin.
Yes. No. Oh no! You had to say it.
The amalgamated.
So the MODOK stuff. So, I guess Marcus shares his longing to add the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby created villain MODOK, mental, mobile, mechanized organism designed only for killing, to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, saying that he wants to put the character into something. The Cat 3 co-writer jokes, you can't just drop a giant flying head in. It's not like, oh, we have to go talk to this guy. There's something I should tell you about him first.
That's funny.
Okay. Let's see. Izzard Taylor and Roland join PlayStation Network's Powers adaptation.
Does anybody read Powers?
No.
Nada.
Yeah.
I tried to read that United States of Murder. Like, I got to like the second or third page and I was just like, eh. And I think it had more to do with the art, even though I kind of like Michael Omen's art. It might have been the coloring. Something, it just seemed odd to me. So, Powers cast Copley in lead role Forbes as Retro Girl.
The dude from District 9.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Everyone released their November 2014 solicits. And we got the July 2014 sales numbers, which we'll get to during our comic book draft. Star Wars Rebels premiere and schedule announced. So they're going to premiere it on with the Watch Disney app ahead of, I think, their October release date or whatever. So you can watch it online first.
Woo.
Yeah. One of the big announcements, well, not big, but one of the announcements from the solicits are canceled series from Marvel, which include Superior Foes of Spider-Man and New Warriors in the November. So sad. I was all hyped for the New Warriors originally.
But there was no Night Thrasher.
Yeah.
As I read it, I was just like, I can tell this won't last.
You know, what's funny is that Superior Foes was, you know, seemed to be really catching a second wind in recent issues. And, you know, it become a pretty enjoyable read, so it's kind of a shame. But I guess it's the type of story that really can, you know, be told in a finite series of issues and, you know, have it sit as a collection.
Well, it's kind of like the flip side of Hawkeye. In a way, like Hawkeye being the hero, Superior Foes of Spider-Man being the villains. It mm-hmm. it does kind of play itself out after a while. It's
right,
you know, becomes like the eighth season of a sitcom after a mm-hmm. while, where you're just kind of retreading the same jokes.
Right. All right.
Tim's asleep.
No, multitasking, of course.
Yeah, uh-huh.
More casting news.
I was about to say, you got to you're about to hit the big news.
Yes. So more casting news, as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has cast their Mockingbird.
Yay! Yeah.
She played Lady J in G.I. Joe Retaliation. Last name, Palicki?
Adrienne Palicki.
Yes.
Comic book fans will recognize the name as the actress who is going to play Wonder Woman in the failed pilot, in the failed NBC pilot. You know, Wonder Woman with pants. You guys remember that?
Yeah. So that's big news.
Yes, she's very attractive.
There was more Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. casting news as... Yes. Today, Crusher Creel is set to menace the agents on, I think, this season debut episode. And people like me that had no clue what that name signifies.
Really?
I never read Hulk growing up.
Well,
Fantastic Four or whatever Absorbing Man has been in.
He was actually a Thor villain at first, because that's where his origin comes from.
What is his origin? I honestly don't know.
Seriously?
Okay. Yeah.
Dirt, are you familiar with this?
Sorry, I just my phone is ringing off.
Oh, no problem. I was about to say, because I'll go into it just very quickly. You know, Crusher Creel is a convict. Or at least this is the old origin. I don't know if this is the new origin as told, you know, or as updated recently. But the bottom line is Loki empowers this guy, a convict, while he's in prison with these Absorbing Man-style powers to absorb the properties and the strengths of anything that he touches. And he breaks out of prison, and basically Loki does this so that Thor can have someone to fight who is, really, really powerful, because he can take on the strengths or the characteristics of anything he touches. Of course, it does have, you know, of course the power does backfire on him every now and again, and Crusher Creel is not exactly the brightest bulb in the pack, so, you know, that's often how he gets defeated. But he's been a long time villain in the Marvel Universe. If anyone read the first Marvel Superhero Secret Wars, Absorbing Man has a number of cool moments in that. Written by Jim Shooter.
Jim Shooter?
Yep.
Alright. More casting news, as Arrow as yet another DC comic book villain. And that would be... hang on, I'm trying to go off memory without opening.
See, I was about to say, I'm like, you're going to remember this one, but not know who Crusher Creel is?
I remember, because I've been reading Green Arrow. let me just see, open it up and see. It's one of the people in the recent series that Lemire has been doing. I should have just picked that website to actually put the name of the guy in the headline. Let's see. Komodo.
Okay.
Who was recently in the Outsiders arc.
Mm-hmm.
DC Comics has specific plans for new Power Girl. And I saw this article pop up this week, so I'm like, oh, she must have debuted this week in World's Finest. Oh, World's Finest came out last week.
Whoops.
So no one thought to say anything about it last week. But so background, Huntress and Power Girl went back to Earth 2, and somehow a friend of Power Girl's daughter has Power Girl's powers now, and she's like bestowed upon her the title Power Girl for Earth Prime.
Hmm.
Okay.
And supposedly Paul Levitz introduced her and created her, but it sounds like he's not going to be pinning whatever future stories for her besides her appearing in the September Futures End story he's writing. But he said that he had specific instructions to create the character, and DC has plans for her. So stay tuned. And last but not least, Boom Studios gets a first look deal with 20th Century Fox TV. I thought Boom already had some kind of deal with Fox. I guess that was movies, right?
Yeah, I knew they announced something a while back, but...
Yeah, because it was like, I think it was movie. It must have just, well, was it First Century Fox or something? They Legendary or some movie studio. I can't keep all the movie studios straight, but they had announced some kind of first look movie deal like earlier in the year. So I guess now they're following up with TV. Good for them.
Well, let's see.
While he looks that up, I'm assuming that's what you're doing. We will get into the comic book reviews for this week.
Yeah, I don't see it right now, so.
Yeah, it's fine. So, should we, I guess, Agent 70, talk to us about Hip Hop Family Tree.
Yes, and I'm also going to describe my visit to Bergen Street Comics. Shout out to Bergen Street Comics right here in Brooklyn, New York. They hosted a launch party for a Hip Hop Family Tree out this week, published by Fantagraphics Books. They had early copies of Hip Hop Family Tree Volume 2, and they had the creator behind the Hip Hop Family Tree books, Ed Piskor, straight from Pittsburgh, in to do a signing and to do a Q&A with Combat Jack, an attorney, a fellow attorney, believe it or not, and a hip-hop journalist, a former attorney in the music world, and now a podcaster who comments on hip-hop and music in general. So, Hip Hop Family Tree, you can see my copy here. Volume 2 came out this week, and Ed Piskor, in his talk, basically relayed all of his early influences, all of his early music influences, and what got him into hip hop, and what got him into chronicling the history of hip hop, in such a graphic way, in such a an encyclopedic manner, because there's so many of these things that people know bits and snippets of, but to actually put it on, put it into graphic novel, into comic book form, and tell these stories that are kind of scattered all across news articles and magazine articles and anecdotal stories, it's a testament to how much he loves the music and the genre. And one of the things that he said that struck me was that, there's a lot of hip-hop fans out there, but there's not many who are willing to put in the work and do the research and put together, a timeline. That's really what it is. It's a family, it's a family tree in title, but it's really a chronology, a timeline of hip-hop from, the earliest days of hip-hop through, and believe it or not, there's so much here. It's so dense. I have only made, like, a small dent in it since picking this book up. But it's still, spoiler alert, it's still my click of the week this week, even though I've only read like a third of it, because it's got so many great things in it. And it's also edging into golden age of hip-hop territory, which is, when I grew up, because you start to see stories and artists that I was familiar with and growing up with, as opposed to, like, some of the really early stuff that maybe I didn't know all that much about that was in the first volume. But in this volume, we're really starting to get into some of the hip-hop that we know and love, and some of the influences on kids who grew up in the 80s who were exposed to hip-hop at that point. Let me say that, you know, Ed Piskor came off as very genuine. He is a true fan of the music. He's a true fan of comics. You know, he gave a quick story about his own upbringing in comics. He came up. I'm not sure if he finished his years at the Joe Kubert school, but he definitely was there. And the biggest influence, I think, on his work is working for, I don't want to get the name wrong. Dirt, you got to help me out here.
The name of what?
There's a name of a comic book creator. There was a movie done about him. No. There's a movie done about him.
Harvey Pekar?
Yes. I knew you'd get it because it was a relatively recent movie that I had not yet seen.
American Splendor.
Yes, American Splendor. I wanted to say American Splendor. I didn't want to completely put my foot in my mouth.
You were thinking of Splenda, and that's that.
Right. Exactly. But Harvey Pekar had a very big influence on Ed Piskor because they worked together. You know, Ed Piskor did a lot of kind of what Todd McFarlane recently made famous in that he sent samples to lots of different artists and editors to try to get advice and try to get an in and trying to get jobs. Well, Harvey Pekar saw Ed Piskor's stuff and offered to, you know, and had him do work for his publications. And that's how he got a lot of experience. That's how he grew as an artist, and he basically apprenticed with Harvey Pekar, and Ed Piskor gave Harvey Pekar a lot of credit during his talk with Combat Jack, and it was just very interesting to hear some of the comic book influences that he had, and it was also great to hear the music influences that Ed Piskor had. He's a huge fan of Public Enemy, so we had a lot to talk about there, and I was excited that in this volume, Chuck D from Public Enemy is depicted in this. It's right at the beginning of the nascent Public Enemy, so I'm glad to see that. Like I said, we're getting into that era of hip hop that I'm a little bit more familiar with, and you know, kids of the '80s will be familiar with. So again, shout out to Bergen Street Comics, shout out to Combat Jack, shout out to Ed Piskor, who, of course, autographed my copy.
Yeah.
This is going to show up backwards on your screens, but it does say to Agent 70.
No, it's showing up correctly.
Oh, awesome.
It's backwards for you, so that you know where you're pointing.
That's correct. So it says to Agent 70, which is pretty, pretty awesome. And I got him to sign my first, my first copy too, the first volume as well. I brought that with me. But all in all, this was a great experience. Launch parties, you know, if you can make it to one, it's pretty awesome. There was a DJ playing hot tracks, especially old school hip hop stuff, golden age stuff. I highly recommend this. You do not have to be a hip hop fan, but if you are, you must pick this up because it's just a great it's a great way to learn about the history of hip hop. It just is.
Dope.
All right.
So
shout out to Ed Piskor. My click of the week right here.
Click of the week early.
Yeah, real early. I got that one right out of the way.
So no 5 minutes of waffling at the end of the show.
That's right. It's like, well, it's a tie. It's this.
So when it comes for me to decide.
Now, there were a couple of good episodes that I had, issues that I read this week in addition to this, so.
Yeah, we'll see.
So let's talk about another big book that came out this week from DC Comics. The Multiversity number one.
Oh.
Since you actually read it, and
someone didn't like it.
I read the first 14 pages.
Are you serious?
I mean, I had to at least check it out.
I read the whole thing. I didn't think it was that bad.
Oh, I couldn't stand it.
No kidding. All right, tell us why you think it was so bad. Where do I begin?
Too meta.
Okay. Well, okay, part of the problem, yeah, is because it's Grant Morrison, there's a little too much of it being aware of itself and trying to show, like, a guy in the real world reading a comic, and the comic is talking to him, and it's telling him, no, don't read this. You're the one making this happen because you're reading it, and blah, 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 which... God, that just annoys the crap out of me when writers try to do that, because the problem is when they try to do something like that, they're trying to open up this window of the person reading being involved with the story, but they draw a character into the story as the person reading the story, so therefore they're just creating another layer of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So his attempt to quote unquote interact with the real world fails because he has to create a fake world for it to interact in. Like, he's doing it the wrong way. And that always bothers me when writers do that, because they're trying to do something and they're actually failing. They're creating something else. I also had big problems because the way the story is set up, you have some sort of malignant force that is devouring these different universes, kind of like a Crisis on Infinite Earths type thing. The problem is it's a giant, like, cauldron monster with one eyeball and a couple legs and I think some wings, and it talks in creepy font that's hard to read.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well,
doesn't it look like Mike Wachowski, whatchamacallit, from Monsters, Inc.?
Mike Wachowski.
Right?
Your paperwork.
Doesn't it look like him a little?
And the problem is that when you have something like Crisis, where the universes were being destroyed, it's like this white light coming, and things just kind of break apart and disintegrate. And it's like you can kind of understand that it's just this force that's destroying the world, as opposed to this is some weird creature. So something created it. It came from somewhere, but you don't know what it is. You don't know why it's there. You don't know what it's called. You don't know what powers it has. You don't know why it wants to do this. You don't know how it can travel from universe to universe. You don't know what it's doing with the energy. You know why? Like, he just wants to create these crazy-ass characters and then hope that you're interested enough that you'll see how things play out.
Right.
You got to tell me, like, what's going on in order to have me interested to see what's going to happen next, because just throwing a bunch of random crap at the screen to see what sticks and to see what people like and that's what you go to as the series progresses is just a dumbass way of laying out a giant story like this. At no point do I find I love multiple universe. Like, I love the idea of the parallel universes and seeing different versions of the same character and how the choices they make, make a difference with, who they become. But what he's doing with his alternate universes is he's doing a lot of, like Earth 8 is called Earth Me, and it's all the self-centered people, and they're all celebrities.
I thought Earth 8 was the Marvel analog.
Well, whatever. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But the point being is that it's not that you make a different decision and your life turns out differently and it gives you something introspective. It's, this is the world of animals. And this is the world where everybody can swim. And this is the world where the sky is green and the grass is blue. And it's just all these stupid concepts. It's not an interesting concept, it's just a dumb concept the way he comes up with these other worlds. And then plus he does make that Marvel, fake Marvel universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I just felt like it was kind of lame. If you're going to do something like this and you're going to introduce characters that are supposed to be the Marvel versions, and you can't use the Marvel ones obviously, so you make up your own, it felt like it was too tongue-in-cheek about the whole thing. Like, it didn't take it seriously. These weren't real characters you were supposed to actually care about in any way. Like, if these were presented as, these are somewhat of our equals and this is going to be a big deal, then that's one thing. But the way they just kind of play it off, and it's like, oh, it's a joke. I get it. You guys hate Marvel because you're DC. I love Marvel. I love DC. This is just silly, And that's not – I don't want silly to be the feeling I get out of something like this. And granted, it's got Captain Carrot, and I love Captain Carrot. I read Captain Carrot when I was growing up, you know what I mean? But it's just, there's a way you can do it that honors a lot of the stuff that came before that he's trying to reference, and it just doesn't feel like he's trying to do that. It feels like he's just trying to be kooky and weird because that's what he does. And so for me, just the whole thing fell apart. And one last thing is, it doesn't help that the first like 5 or 6 pages is loaded with text and has weird ass names like mm-hmm. Nix Yoltan.
Yeah,
you can't pronounce it correctly. So in your head, as you're reading, it's like you keep stopping.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what am I reading here? Is this a name? Is this a place? Is this a person? Is this a thing? You know, like, what, I don't know. Like, what am I referencing here? You know, and that's also a problem for me too. So,
right. I think the name Nix, the character Nix Yotan, was from Final Crisis.
Yeah, yeah. I mean that.
But
that
it's doesn't. But the point is, it doesn't change your point, which is the name is just, you know, it's.
Well, and he it's just kind of like thrown out there, like you're kind of supposed to know what it is.
Right.
And they say, you know, he's the last of the monitors, but it doesn't say who are the monitors.
That's correct.
And what did the monitors do in the past? And why are you supposed to care that there's a monitor here? And what are the monitors' jobs? And,
right.
you know, I mean, it's just he writes everything in such a way that you're going to have to go in Wikipedia a bunch of this stuff, and that's not how you entice new readers.
Agreed.
Me, myself being a new reader, I had to do homework before actually reading this book. So I went to multiversity.com, and they had an article from, I think, the 19th, where they gave, like, Cribb's notes or, you know, notes for
notes, yeah.
you know, for reading the Multiversity. And it actually did help a little bit, because they talked about they started with that big map.
Right, with all the worlds in the circle.
And explained how, like, the Rocket Eternity is in the middle and what that comes from and how everything relates to Crisis on Infinite Earths and Infinite Crisis and 52 and all those other stuff, events in DC history. And they gave, like, a glossary of terms. They explained who the monitor and anti-monitors were. And, I mean, I've always heard those names, and I've seen, I guess, images and pictures of them, but I always got them confused. I didn't know what was a monitor and what's an anti-monitor. I'm not sure if I really do now, but...
Right. And that's a problem in a book like this, because this book should explain that. You shouldn't have to go outside of these pages in order to figure out what the heck he's talking about.
The monitors are good guys, right?
Right. They're the good guys.
And anti-monitor is the big bad guy.
Right.
Aren't they robots? Or the monitors humans?
The monitors are humans. The anti-monitor, I always got the impression it was a dude in a suit.
Oh.
But, I mean, it never really said one way or another.
Gotcha. Okay.
Honestly, I didn't really care to look into what was, you know, to me, just a crazy, you know, out there Morrison story. So I just read it. And if I didn't understand something, I just kept going. You know, all the directions on the page be damned. And to be perfectly honest, you know, I could see, you know, the differences between the Earths, like the very subtle differences, as Zert was saying, without looking at the map. And I guess the map is supposed to help, you know, with the, you know, understanding. And I guess I should have gone online, but you know what? I didn't. And I was mildly entertained by this issue. I was definitely put off by how dense the story seems to be, even though it does seem like a very simple story. The word balloon,
yeah,
and then
I think,
you know,
I,
exposition on the each
right.
page was just drowning,
like
you know,
it's a very simple. It's a very simple idea that they need these heroes from these worlds to come together to fight some sort of threat.
Right.
So they're grabbing the Superman of this world and the Flash of that world and the Shazam of whatever world, and they're bringing them all together. And that's
right.
a very simple story, and he's turned it into one of the most complicated, complex, confusing, annoying things he could possibly make out of it.
Right, right. So that part I can sympathize with. I just tried to let the core of the story carry me through to the end. So I'm not as critical of the issue, but I definitely see, you know, I definitely understand and agree with your feelings on what the shortcomings are.
And my big question is this going to affect New 52 continuity, or is this just a...
Oh, who cares?
Go play... go play in your sandbox by yourself.
Well, first we got to figure out what Future's End is doing to the continuity right. before we can worry about what Multiversity is doing to the continuity.
What was the fallout of Forever Evil? I was thinking about that today.
Besides
Luthor in Justice League.
Well, one is that Superwoman's pregnant, and she's going to be having that baby, and that's going to affect something one way or another. We know that the threat of Darkseid is going to be coming to Earth, and he already destroyed Earth 3, and he's been attacking Earth 2, so we know that Earth 1 is next. It changed Dick Grayson's life, you know. But I think beyond that, not really a whole lot else.
Okay. I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
Oh, I will say, even though Dork Kika says he skipped Multiversity due to the art, I will say I enjoyed Ivan Reis's... Rice's...
Right. I thought it was fairly strong. I just retweeted... You know, I just tweeted back... You know, I thought the art was fairly strong. I thought that was the strong point of the book, and at least helped you move along. You know, helped you, your eyes and move through the story, despite all. Like Dirt was saying, despite all the text.
Okay.
I had no issues with the artwork beyond the bad character design. So, anyway.
Next up, let's jump to a book we did enjoy, New Avengers 23.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is a problem for me because I actually liked it. and I'm actually...
There's a number of New Avengers issues you've liked in a row now.
Yeah, and I've actually gone back several months, back to issue 16, I think, when they did the 16.1. I started back with that and read all the way back up through 23, and loved every moment of it. And getting to issue 23, this is going to be my click of the week. I love this. I love Namor.
Wow.
He is my hero now.
is it safe to say that, I mean, the first three-fourths of the book is fine, but it's really just the last, what, three or four pages?
What do you mean?
As far as,
I mean, yeah, because they, well, I mean, I thought it was interesting, the idea that...
They just were like,
they just kind of gave up. Yeah.
Right. They're just like, it's coming, we can't do anything about it.
Well, they can do something about it. They're just not willing to.
Right.
But I just loved seeing, like, Bruce Banner, you know, buying the beer, sitting in the desert, and it got the ghost of Hulk sitting next to him, and just like, well, this is it, you know. Tony Stark lining up a bunch of shot glasses, filling them up, and just staring at him, you know. He's like, what am I going to do? It's the end of the world.
And then the clock hits zero, and nothing happens. At first,
Yeah, that is a spoiler.
Eh. So that happens, and then it's like, well, what happened?
Da da da.
Not spoil that.
I mean, the story throughout the main part of the book was enough of diving into the characters and showing how the characters are reacting to the situation that I really felt invested in the story. And really invested in the characters. And while you could argue that what's happening in this book, in this story, kind of has some problems with what may be happening in other parts of the Marvel Universe with some of these characters,
right?
Still, though, overall, I really just enjoyed the way that Hickman had all of this play out. And then when you get to the end, and you get, you know, as we were saying, those last, like, three pages, then now I'm like, I want the next issue.
Yeah.
Like, I can't wait for the next, like, I want to know where this is going. Like, this hit every right note of what a comic should read like, especially after the mess that was Multiversity. After I read this, I was like, this is what I wanted. Like, this is what comics should be.
Well, I think it's a great turn for the character, you know, that we're talking about in abstract. So
next month is the 8-month jump ahead, right? Because they're doing the same month as the September thing
as
for
DC is doing it.
Yeah, so that should be interesting. I'm ready to see how everything's different.
Okay. Yep, same here.
So yeah, we enjoyed New Avengers 23 very much.
So are all Marvel books doing that?
Only Avengers and New Avengers are jumping ahead.
Oh, okay.
And then just for September, and then when they get back to October, they go back to the present, and I think they still go back to the present and count down. Each month will count down till they reach that point in the September issues, if that makes sense.
Yeah, see, I haven't been reading regular Avengers, just New Avengers. So
that's been kind of kooky. I will say New Avengers has been the better Avengers.
It's been more dramatic lately, you know, because the main Avengers book has still been kind of bouncing around between, you know, a couple different characters, whereas New Avengers has really kept its focus on, you know, these incursions and what's, you know, you know, the closer they start to come in frequency, and how they finally ended up, you know, crossing, or at least not wanting to cross that last line, and then, you know, the fallout from actually, you know, crossing the line. So that's, I think, the New Avengers story has been far more focused in recent, you know, I would say in the last, like, 10 issues. Like Dirt was saying, he went back at least 6 or 7 issues, and it's been a pretty focused story. So I think, you know, it's a lot easier to read that way.
I think maybe part of it helps that when I went back to 16, like, I already kind of knew what was going to happen, obviously. So I could see how seeds were being planted and things were being done building up to.
Right.
Which is, I think, a lot of times easier to see than as opposed to when you're waiting month to month for a lot of these issues. And you have to watch the stuff play out. And then after a while, you can think back and say, oh, right, that played into what eventually happens.
Right.
Whereas here, because going back to, I read them all in a row, so I forget which one it is. But there's this long part where Namor and Black Panther are sitting there and they're like drinking. Mm-hmm. Drinking some like crazy wine or whatever, conversation, and there's actually a lot more going on in that conversation than what you see in that issue because of what happens after. So
and you also have to bear in mind the stuff that you know that they're referencing too. You know that had happened in the past that they were at least you know on face value looking to you know forgive and forget, but some things you can't. And that's what comes out. But, you know, if you'd been really reading this, you know, from, you know, the Hickman mumbo jumbo from day one and the stuff that had been happening in the Marvel Universe, I understood that conversation to be what it was. And I could sense that they were trying to set something up. But what I was going to add to what you said is what's cool about this is that it gives these issues rereadability.
Yeah.
You want to definitely go back now. And that's a great thing. You know, because you want to go back and connect the dots that you weren't quite sure how they connected back then. Listen, that's a great thing. You pull up these issues from the, you know, from your box or, you know,
Comixology.
Exactly, the queue in your Comixology or in your Marvel app, and you just go back and reread them.
It definitely feels like one of those things where maybe next year, if you go on vacation, you know, and you're just sitting next to the pool or, you know, down the beach
or on a plane.
On a plane, yeah, or something like that. You know, pull out your tablet or grab your backpack and just sit down and read them all, or grab the trade, you know, if you're going to be one of those people. Then, you know, it's definitely one of those things that you can kind of digest. You don't have to have New Avengers 1 through 15, you know. And where it goes from here, I don't know. But, I mean, so far, this storyline that this chunk is just fantastic.
Cool.
And I hate it because it's a stupid Marvel Avengers book.
Enjoy it.
That's cool.
So, let's hear about Daredevil number 7.
Oh, this was a great issue. Let me see. Let me pull this up. This is a great issue. It is an Original Sin tie-in, and if you read Daredevil number 6, you may have had some misgivings about where Wade was going with some retconning of. And that's sort of implied with this Original Sin event. There's going to be some retconning of, you know, Marvel history, specifically in Daredevil, you know, how the story of Batlin, Jack Murdock, and how Matt Murdock's mother, you know, enters the sisterhood, you know, becomes a nun. You know, that's explored in these, you know, in this issue and in the past, in the most recent issue. And the bottom line is, just to cut to the chase, Daredevil's mom, you know, we should all know, is a nun, but she became an activist. You know, this is a little bit of retconning. And she became, you know, kind of caught up in protesting something that the Wakandan government was doing. And basically, she becomes an enemy of the state of Wakanda, and is kidnapped and transported to Wakanda for crimes against the state of Wakanda. Forget the fact that she did all this on U.S. soil. You know, they kind of explain it away, like, yeah, you know, she was on Wakandan soil. You know, like that they had bought. You know, kind of had diplomatic stuff going on or whatever. But you know, the bottom line is, part of the retcon that I was referencing before is, you know, what drives, you know, Daredevil's mother out of Daredevil and his father's life. And I wasn't comfortable with where this was going, but this issue served to reveal that that was a swerve that Mark Waid had put in there to deceive you, to make your head kind of spin a little bit. And this issue kind of set things so that it was a little easier to understand. It was a little, you know, it was tied up, you know, a little neatly, but at the same time, you know, some of it made a lot of sense. It was a weird use of Shuri, the current queen of Wakanda, and just Wakanda in general. But, it was just a mechanism to get Daredevil's mother, you know, kind of give her a more a strong role, as opposed to just, you know, not that, you know, being a nun in a New York City Catholic church isn't a strong, a hard job and, you know, requires a strong woman. Wade basically empowers her in this story and shows that she does have a lot more to her than we might have thought. And, you know, and finally, like I said, The retcon that wasn't is pretty much what this is.
So is all the stuff with Wakanda a red herring?
Not necessarily a red herring. It's just a means to get to an end. It's so, not the main part of the story.
So the Wakandan government is still a group of dirtbags.
Well, parts of the Wakandan government.
So Mark Waid hates Black Panther. That's what you're telling me? That's the headline.
No.
Let's run
Mark
it. Waid.
But what's funny is that Mark Waid likes the Black Panther. He may not like where they're going with Shuri, and you know, and I guess it's sort of it's an offshoot of, you know, T'Challa losing the throne and putting a different character in who we're not that familiar with, and maybe exposing what Wakanda might, you know, would be without, you know, T'Challa as like the leader who is much more connected with the West and the rest of the world than Shuri is.
Mark Waid hates Black Panther. Got it.
Let's not put words into anybody's
mouth.
Hey, man,
Kevin Feige. Don't want to make a movie.
Oh, that's
Rebel.
Lame.
They really should.
They really should. That's a shame. But like I said, this was a nice story. Like I said, it's the retcon that wasn't. I like the way it ended, you know. Sue me, I'm kind of sap, you know.
Okay. And supposedly, I think Mark Waid tweeted this week that he is now the longest running consecutive writer or creator on Daredevil.
Nice. Congratulations.
So. Good job. Let's see. we all enjoyed Batman and Robin number 34, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the last books I read this week, and I liked it.
So this sort of ties into, relates to going back to the death of the family. Is it of the family or in the
family? Death of the family.
Of
yeah.
the family. Mm-hmm. Sort of bringing Red Robin, Red Hood, and Batgirl back into the fold, even though to me they never really left the fold. At least in the other Batman books.
That's just some family drama. It's not, you know, something, as we saw in this issue, it's nothing a family conversation couldn't cure, right?
I'm going to say nothing that peanut butter and jelly sandwiches can't cure.
True enough, true enough.
And Batman commits robbery in the Watchtower.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's stealing his own stuff.
That's right. He's getting it back, reclaiming it.
Restealing, and he goes to Apocalypse.
Da, da, da.
But who's the artist? Gleason?
Yeah.
Patrick Gleason? I like his art. His art is good. That's all I have to say.
It's all right. It's all right. There's a couple of faces that kind of threw me off a little, but it's all right.
It's kind of like his style, though.
I've noticed that sometimes he's got this thing where everybody has like a Greek nose, you know, that kind of Roman.
Yeah,
arch. It seems like there's a lot of, I guess maybe because it's the coloring that. There's a lot of big headshots. Yeah, there's a lot of head. Yeah, panels with heads in them. Speaking, it's a lot of that, but I don't know. I like the combo.
I like how the characters in the story, like they're complaining about death in the family, but almost in the sense of they're complaining about the story. Like,
right.
Man, this was dumb when we did this.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, man, whoever wrote that part of our lives was an idiot. You know, like I just kind of like that because. You know, it's so many people had problems with a lot of aspects of death of the family and and some of the stuff that had happened in the Bat books. And so when they're able to kind of, you know, poke fun at that a little bit, that's the correct way to kind of meta the situation. You know, unlike Multiversity, this is the way that you, you know, you kind of poke fun at, you had people look back. Because people will do that, you know, in their real lives. They'll dryly kind of look back at some of the mistakes that they've made or some of the things that have happened in their life that kind of went the wrong way. And, you know, it's like, man, we were idiots back then. Why the heck did we even make those decisions? And so I enjoyed that. I thought that was a fun part of the story.
I agree.
Let's see. I didn't finish Nova 20. Did you read that, Dirt?
Nope.
It's usually one of the books you like to get to.
I haven't read, actually, Nova in a couple months.
Since art changed?
Since the Beta Ray Bill story. Like, I liked the Beta Ray Bill stuff, and I was like, oh, Beta Ray Bill, and then he was gone. I was like, all right.
Yeah. And now Rocket's taking his place.
Yeah, exactly. It's original Sin time. I'll just do a quickie review. I like this issue in that it was a nice wrap-up to what was kind of getting to be an annoying arc in the story, but it does help to build another layer onto Sam Alexander's character. We find out more about his father. You know, again, this is original Sin rearing its head in this issue. Revealing more secrets, you know, to Sam Alexander. You know, there's a little bit more Nova stuff involved, Nova Corps stuff involved. I'm still not sure what they're going to do in terms of reestablishing what is left of the Nova Corps or what still exists that's Nova Corps related. So I guess they're going to be exploring some of that in this book. But I like this book because it wasn't all that complicated, to be perfectly honest. You know, well, it kept things relatively simple, and it moved the story along. Like I said, it moves. I don't know if the next issue is going to be another original Sentai, and I don't think so, but I know that these two issues have been, or at least the last two issues have been, you know, regarding, Jesse Alexander, I think is his father's name, so.
Yeah.
Have any other Novas been appearing anywhere else in any Marvel books?
No.
Because the whole deal with this book is that this was the like Red Brigade of Novas,
or the Black Novas, right?
Because they have the red starburst on their mask instead of the yellow starburst, so they were like a different group.
Mm-hmm.
So where the hell are the other Novas?
Right, that's kind of what I was saying. Like, I don't know what they're going to do.
I mean,
there was an actual core back when Richard Rider, because he reestablished the core, right? I remember seeing a book maybe before Thanos Imperative where he was with a team of
Abnett Novas. And Lanning were doing Nova. Probably, I don't know what, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, whenever they were doing it, it was like the Green Lantern Corps.
Right.
I mean, you couldn't throw a dead cat through the galaxy without hitting a Nova, you know, is basically how it worked. And the whole point of this Nova is like this was a different subgroup of Novas. This is like the Indigo tribe lands on Earth, and suddenly there's no Green Lanterns to be found anywhere. Like, I don't understand where are all the Nova? And I don't know if maybe that's something that got answered somewhere else.
Right. I want to say at some point Richard Rider had to absorb the entire Nova Force back into him, and I think he was holding the totality of the Nova Force, which doesn't explain this Black Nova stuff, but that, you know, I recall that as being a plot point.
And then what happened?
He got trapped in the Kanzerverse.
Hmm.
And then we're going to find out soon what happened.
Yeah, and then Superman of Earth 23 is going to find him in Multiversity. Great. Can't wait to read that.
Yeah. Listen, I miss Richard Rider. I thought they really developed his character in a really good way during Annihilation and all that other stuff. They really matured the character. And I was very disappointed that they decided that his character would be the one that they would kind of reboot and make a legacy character and start with a new teenage, you know, version.
Like, I don't fault this book necessarily. You know, like I said, I do generally read this one. You know, just it's kind of fallen off in the last, you know, couple months, whatever. I do generally enjoy it, so I don't fault this Nova series necessarily for any loss of the old one, because I know that's an editorial that has nothing to do with the writer on this book,
right,
or, you know, anything like that. But at the same time, it's just like it feels like they just have this giant hole in the universe, that there's this big question mark just out there, and everyone's just kind of, you know, flying past it, not paying any attention to it.
Right. Well, Bendis is going to answer it.
Right. In Guardians, right?
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure he's just going to piss more people off is what the verdict. Yep, he's dead.
Yeah, I'm waiting for, you know, like, Bendis is not scheduled to be at New York Comic Con, but if he is, I'm going to have words with him about that.
Yeah, make sure to do that. And I'm sure it's going to be like they don't want him around at all because they're going to try to introduce Sam Alexander in the cinematic universe. Even though the books and the movies aren't related. Until they want them to be related.
That's right.
It'll be some little kid with a Nova and a snow globe, and he's just staring at this Nova and the snow globe, and it was all a memory in his head. The old Nova Corps never existed. It was seen elsewhere. It just it was never there. It went away and never to return.
Okay.
All right. What else?
Rapid review time?
Yeah. Let me throw one out there that I did like. I like where this book is going. All New Ghost Rider, number 6 this week, was good. I don't know if this is his first issue, but Damian Scott, shout out to Brooklyn, is doing the art on this, and it looks very clean. It's a kind of a hip-hop influenced style, but it's not all that far removed from Trad Moore style. The car stuff is still very well rendered. I like the characterization in this. I missed a couple of issues. I'm actually going to go back and read them to make sure that I'm caught up, and that's a good sign. that they've created a character and a set of characters that are that make me want to go back and reread things that I missed. Much like what Dirt was saying before about New Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
I like that this is going to make me go back and reread stuff that I missed. So, I like the direction that this book is going in. You know, all my jokes aside about, how this is Fast and Furious / Ghost Rider, you know, hell on wheels, you know, this is a play, definitely a play on that. There's definitely some Fast and Furious aspects to the story, but it still stands on its own as I hate to say it, it's another coming of age, you know, Marvel, a coming of age story in the Marvel universe. There's a couple of these going on right now. There's this, there's Nova, there's Ms. Marvel that I hope we get to in rapid reviews that, this is another phase for Marvel. You know, they've got a lot of these characters. I think they're actually developing them fairly well, at least with regards to Ghost Rider and Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to get to this over the weekend. At least I'll stick with it till it gets to its 12 issues and probably meets its end like New Warriors.
Oh, I hope not. I hope not. I hope it stays. I hope it keeps going. Although I don't, not looking at the sales charts, I may have to, make sure I pick up these issues before and see if I can't lend some support to it.
Well, if you're gonna buy like 10,000 copies, sure.
Oh, right.
Let's see. All New X Factor number 12.
Yes, I read that. Go ahead.
Still one of my favorite X books each month. So X Factor, several industries debuts X Factor at a press conference. What can go wrong?
Oh, I like that. That was funny.
Actually, not much really does go wrong.
Right, but I like that. The lines that Polaris had about, well, what happened the last time X Factor had a press conference, because I remember that. I remember Guido calling himself Strong Guy. I couldn't believe that. I remembered that, and it made me laugh out loud when I read that.
That was also written by Peter David, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah.
What was?
So. X Factor back then.
Oh, yeah.
It was, Larry Stroman doing the artwork?
Yes.
Mark Waid took over their big rebirth of X-Factor after the original X-Men left to go back to their X title?
Yeah, when they did, with Jim Lee, the blue and the gold.
Yeah.
I remember that. Very funny.
And
very funny.
Surprise stuff. Guest star, guest appearance in this issue. Very touching.
Oh, yes.
Is that a spoiler?
Mild.
Okay. No, because we didn't say who it was.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if you told me, okay.
Right.
And Mighty Avengers 13.
Meh.
It was fun. It was fine. Old and Mighty Avengers Assemble.
It was okay. It was okay. Some of those older Mighty Avengers are kind of annoying.
Mighty Avengers only has, one issue left? Is that right? Two issues?
Oh, does it relaunch in the fall? Well, no, because...
No, it relaunches with Captain America in the
Mighty Avengers. Captain America has to get the issue 25, I think.
Hmm.
And I think that's like two more months. So, a little ways to go.
All right. But Greg Land's not going anywhere. Damn you, Greg Land. did anyone read Ms. Marvel number 7?
No, haven't made it to
this
it
This is yet. Good stuff, people. You got, it's... You know,
I don't know. I read the first couple, and they really didn't do anything for me. So.
Really?
Yeah.
I like this. I think the story has heart. I like the character. I think the characterization.
I'm too old for these kids.
Maybe it's because
shut up! You got a curfew. Get home.
I kind of chuckle every time I read something that I'm far too old to understand. So I appreciate that. I don't try to – maybe it's why – maybe I sort of turn off that I don't understand this part of my my thinking, much like when I was reading Multiversity apparently. I just couldn't care less whether or not I understand the reference. I just kept reading it and tried to keep to the main arc of the story. And the main arc of this story is, Kamala – you know, the new Ms. Marvel basically fighting her first supervillain and, you know, getting the help of Wolverine, you know, who just sort of strolls in and, you know, he's still the current continuity of Wolverine with no healing factor. And basically, you know, you see him struggling through this particular adventure and, you know, we get to the end. And there's a nice little transition into the next arc where she becomes known to the Inhumans because she is an Inhuman. She gains her power. You know, spoiler. It's not a spoiler. We're already 7 issues in, people. She had gained her powers through the through exposure to the Terrigen mists from the Terrigen bomb. So the Inhumans will finally appear and you know, interact with you know, with the latest member of the Inhuman race.
Did you just say Inhuman race?
Yes.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. But I, like I said, I like it. The story has a lot of character. Give it a shot, dude.
Get off my lawn.
Has a lot of spirit. I like it for that.
What else did I read this week?
You covered all of my stuff.
Yeah, Original Sin number 5 ends that miniseries.
And someone died?
Someone died.
Who died?
Kinda, sorta.
Wait, I read it. I don't remember anyone dying. That's a bad thing.
The very first story.
Sins number 5, the very first story.
Was it Miles Morhamis, the in Ultimate
Spider-Man? Oh, yeah, well, somebody died a long, long time ago. That's what, you know, that's what I got out of that one, you know? But yeah, okay. Let's see. Did I read anything here that I did not add to my list? Real quick before we go off the air. No, I think we covered everything. Deadly Hands of Kung Fu number 4 was a very hard read. That's, I didn't even put it down on my list. It's a hard read.
So, is that ongoing series?
No, I think it's over. I think it's a 4-issue limited series. This was the third and fourth issues are just pretty hard to read. I thought the first two were decent, but the third and fourth ones were kind of a tough read.
Okay.
Actually, I do have one other thing to get to here, if I can pull it up. A couple weeks ago, I was talking about a book called Wool that was based on a New York Times best-selling novel that was being turned into comics, and issue 1 had hit print. Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray were helping to convert it into comic form. And the first issue hit print. What I didn't realize was that the entire series was already available digitally. It is just now making the way from digital to the world of print. So I went online and read the entire series in digital, which is, I think, 6 issues that are collected in order to make this story. And the story is about the future, and humanity is living inside these silos, basically, that have been buried in the ground. And each silo is self-sustaining, and the people who live in the silo believe that they are the last remnants of humanity. And what they don't realize is that there's actually 50 of these silos, and only a few key people in each silo are in communication with each other. And the series is called Wool because when anybody speaks
up... You and your post-apocalyptic...
Yeah, well, you know, if anybody speaks up or questions authority, they are sent out with a steel wool, sponge,
sounds like hazing,
whatever you call it. And they're supposed to clean the outside of the silo. And, of course, whatever's outside, the harsh conditions of the real world will end up killing them.
Hmm.
And so... one of the characters actually, you know, questions what's actually going on. She gets banished to the outside, but she's put enough of the pieces together that when she goes out, she's actually able to survive and make it to another silo. And when she makes it to another silo, what she finds out is, you know, this whole conspiracy about these people and what has happened to the world and how it got this way and who's really in charge of everything. And then stages a return to her original silo and sets up a coup. And this is actually, I guess, part one of an ongoing novel series. There's actually several of these novels out there, and this is the first one that got turned into comics. I really enjoyed this. Like, I enjoyed this enough that I'll probably sit down sometime in the next couple weeks and read the next novel. Like, I like the comics so much, I'm going to read prose, you know?
That's pretty cool.
But it really is a good story, and it's one of those where anybody who likes that sort of either post-apocalyptic or even that sci-fi where it's futuristic just because they have some technology that we don't have, but it's really not about the technology or about the future. It's got kind of that Arthur C. Clarke type feel about it where it's about people and the people just have machines that are prettier and shinier than ours, you know? But otherwise, it could be, you know, any time period really. Like this, these could have been characters stuck in this silo in the 50s that just had some kind of technology that nobody else had, you know? It's just really well done. It's a really well told story. I enjoyed sitting down and reading this as one big long story, and if they adapt any of the other novels into the comics, I'm going to pick those up too. But like I said, I enjoyed it enough that I'm probably going to go out and read the actual novels. And because I only read like three comics that came out this week, because this was a light week for me, I had time to sit down and
read this week. Of your time up.
Yeah, so I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And if anybody looking for something along those lines, go check it out. It's available. The entire thing's available on, I believe, Comixology. It's also an Amazon ebook. The comic is available as an Amazon ebook as well as the original novels. And I believe it's also in the iTunes bookstore. You can buy it there also. So anyway, really enjoyed it. Good stuff. People should look for it.
Cool.
So, there you go.
Excellent. Mm. Excellent. All right, so click of the week time?
Click of the week time.
Well, since we already did mine.
Family tree.
Yeah, I was about to say, we did mine. It's the return of the non-superhero click of the week. Hip-Hop Family Tree, Volume 2. I did find out that Ed Piskor is set up to do at least 6 more of these, and there's a lot more to look forward to in terms of Hip Hop Family Tree, although he's not sure if he's going to make it all the way to present day hip hop. But, you know, be on the lookout for an article I'm going to post to Comic Chronicles, The Click Nation, and, you know, you'll catch a tweet about it or a feed notice on the Cults of the Podcast Network. So be on the lookout for that. Hopefully I can get this article up sooner than I got up the Special Edition NYC article I did.
Boom. And my click of the week, I'm going to have to go with Dirt and go with New Avengers 23.
Nice.
Bring it back up. All right, then.
Nice.
Just my reaction after – and it was actually the first book this week I read. And I was like, ho, ho, ho. Yeah. So
it's good stuff. Good stuff. I'm really, you know, like I said, I'm self-loathing here because these are Marvel comics. These are Avengers books. I'm not supposed to like these. But
So once time runs out, begins next month and counts down all the way through next year, are you going to keep, at least as far as you see, you're going to keep reading New Avengers and Avengers?
I don't know about Avengers itself. I'll have to go back in the archives, grab a couple of the past several months of issues and take a look at them, see if I'm going to go with that one at all. But, I mean, as far as New Avengers, it's the same thing as Supergirl. You know, I'm just going to run with it until it loses me. So, you know, they made Supergirl a Red Lantern, but it was interesting. I stuck with it. You know, they're going to bring in a new writer artist. We'll see how it goes. As far as New Avengers, I've loved what's been going on in the last several months, so I'm just going to keep riding the pony until it falls over and dies.
There you go.
All right.
Sounds good.
So I want to thank you all for tuning in live tonight or watching on replay or listening on replay. I want to remind you to go to theclicknation.com and follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98. Dirt is at PCN underscore Dirt. Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70. Radicat, who is not here, is at Radicat and at News Nerds Need. And so is that convention you're going to, is that next week?
No, it's this weekend, right?
It's tomorrow.
Oh, it's this weekend. Okay. So yeah. You will be with us next week to let us know how that goes.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
Show off all the cool stuff you get.
Yeah, well, my daughter just had a birthday, so I'm not exactly rolling in funds at the moment, but we'll see. We'll see what I can find while I'm up there. But I'm going to try to get some interviews, talk to some people, see what happens.
Nice. Original content, baby.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
We're going to have some original content.
So tune in next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey. It's Dr. Doom.
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, you mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
For you, the listeners of the Cold Slither Podcast Network, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I personally recommend The Giver by Lois Lowry, which has been adapted into a full-length feature film which is in theaters today. I'm reading that right now on Audible in the car, so that means that I don't have to even thumb through any pages. I could do it while driving. But you can choose from that and other titles, such as Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, Bossy Pants by Tina Fey, or you can even listen to an audiobook of Orange is the New Black, My Year in a Women's Prison, if you want to hear that. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/coldslither. Again, that's audibletrial.com/coldslither for your free audiobook.